Ladies and gentlemen, Chairperson, once again, thank you for inviting me to be here with you to discuss how we manage the care of the pain of the critically ill adult in the United Kingdom. I would also like to thank the previous speakers for outlining many of the issues which are very relevant in the UK. I totally endorse and agree with the care processes and use of interventions to support and empower the patient to become pain-free. So once again, thank you for setting the scene so well. What I plan to do in this short presentation is to address two case studies in the adult with pain in the UK. Why assess pain? In the United Kingdom, we have a moral and ethical duty as stated in our professional code of conduct. But I believe it's about improving and maintaining a nurse-patient relationship. It's about ensuring continuity of care, acknowledging the individuality of the patient, and promoting a partnership in pain control. There is, of course, a humanitarian values, a legal implications. The number of negligence claims made against nurses worldwide is increasing, and I think this is something we must, as a community of nurses, be mindful. Obviously, assessing pain helps us to diagnose the patient's condition and how to plan appropriate therapeutic interventions. Now, in the United Kingdom, every nurse probably knows the first quote by heart. They can recite it. Pain is what the patient says it is, and it exists when the experiencing person says it does. This is based on the work of McCaffrey, who's been very influential in the United Kingdom. I prefer the second quote, that if you care for your patient, then you have a duty to learn as much as you can about the nature of your patient's pain, as only by understanding this can you do something about it. Typically, in the UK, we will use the nursing process as a framework to organize our care. In the patient presenting with sudden chest pain, an assessment needs to be carried out to determine whether the condition is life-threatening and how best to intervene. Scientific principles will guide our decisions and processes. Typically, this will include looking at the presenting history and risk factors, conducting a physical examination, reviewing the evidence from the ECG, and laboratory results. But as we all know, these take some time to come back. Traditionally, these activities would have been the doctor's remit. But nurses who have now been specially trained as chest pain nurses or have a responsibility in relation to thrombolysis can perform all these duties and can prescribe thrombolysis and painkillers according to patient group directive legislation. In most instances, nursing decisions to assist in individualized care in relation to pain management require the analysis of relevant data. So, we seek to conduct a systematic assessment of chest pain. We measure the intensity through a VAS or a numerical rating scale. Research also tells us that we should look at gender differences. We will also consider preliminary data from the ECG, for example, if the ST elevation is raised. We will consider other symptoms, and as previously mentioned, we will also look at nonverbal behavior, which might provide us some vital clues, such as how is the patient breathing? Is the patient lying in a particular position? Using the mnemonic PQRST helps us to be more scientific and systematic in our approach to identifying the patient's pain. It allows nurses to be methodological and to document their findings in a systematic way. But I also like this model because it helps us to differentiate different types of chest pain. For example, pulmonary embolus, esophagitis, or myocardial infarction. So, the mnemonic. P stands for presentation. Q relates to the quality, R, radiation and region. S are the symptoms. T, temporal associations. In other words, what made it better? How long did it take to feel better? And to complement this, we will use intensity scores and we will use a body map. Earlier on, I mentioned gender. And you can see from this data that women reported more neck pain and right arm pain compared to men. The same study also highlighted that women had more back pain and central back pain when compared to men. This is quite likely to mean that women will often fail to recognize their symptoms. They may think that they're getting old, they may think they've got rheumatic pain or problems with their muscles. So when analyzing the nature of a patient's chest pain, suggestive of coronary heart disease, evaluating gender differences is important and we need to look at how empirical data influences the decisions made. Implementation of nursing-based interventions. This will be based around a number of concepts which form part of a protocol. MONA briefly stands for morphine, oxygen, nitrates, and aspirin. Nitrates will be titrated according to the pain and the systolic blood pressure. Morphine will be given on a 2-hourly to 4-hourly basis, and this will be given with an antiemetic such as Demetil. We will continue to monitor the patient's pain and to assess the effectiveness of the morphine and the nitrates. We will also assess the location and radiation using the body map. But throughout the patient's stay, we will give reassurance and explanations to make the patient comfortable and reduce their stress. Increasingly, in some of the units I visit, music therapy is becoming very popular as a way of distractive therapy. Patients can bring their own music and use a Sonic Walkman and then use music to relax. This table shows how we would assess and monitor pain. So here we have 937, 2 milligrams of nitrates. Pain score is low. sinus rhythm, nitrates continue. The patient has had a very vigorous wash. His pain increases, and we increase the nitrates to 4 milligrams. Incidentally, there's also changes in his ECG, suggesting an inferior infarction. We give him morphine, we evaluate pain, we maintain the nitrates, let the doctors know. Gradually, an hour later, nitrates come down, pain is there, and we monitor blood pressure. Now, we do have some discretion and some autonomy, but everything we do will be controlled according to very strict protocols. Educational interventions. Now, I don't know how many of you worked in the UK or know many British people, but they tend to be very stoic. They will tend not to complain of their pain. And this makes it more difficult. So, using open questions, good communication skills, and building a therapeutic relationship with the patient is very important in the UK. We find that many patients leave coronary care units with unmanaged chest pain. So we need to teach them to understand the significance of their symptoms and how to respond to these. We also now encourage patients to keep a diary. Some cases that may mean reporting when writing down when they have pain. Sometimes we may give them a body map and they can draw where their pain is. And we also teach patients strategies to prevent and manage further symptoms at home. As you can see, we have many research-based protocols. We have them for the increase in pain symptoms. We have them for changes to the ECG, and particularly for patients who are also experiencing silent ischemia. But in every hospital, you'll have a whole range of protocols which are about managing the patient with intravenous infusion, with the administration of opiates, monitoring of opiates, use of technical equipment, documentation, discontinuation of opiates, and management complications. And if you choose to use alternative or complementary therapies, such as massage, you will also need to follow a protocol on how to conduct this. It is also important to remember that unless we talk to patients, it is difficult to know how they are feeling and why they are feeling that way. As the picture reads, sometimes when you're sad, nobody understands your pain. Psychological distress is common the first 48 hours after a myocardial infarction and may have an impact on physical symptoms and inhibit recovery. So communication is vital throughout their stay. The second case study I want to describe to you is a patient who is in intensive care following surgery. The decision to intervene and reduce the patient's pain postoperatively will be influenced by the type of surgery. If the surgery is extensive and involves many tissues, patients may experience more pain than undergoing a minor procedure. Surgery to replace a joint is much painful and longer lasting than a patient having a mole removed. Previous experience of pain is also important. But the use of anesthetics, the respiratory risk patient, and potential for drug toxicity are all important variables that need to be considered in planning appropriate pain control strategies. pain management. I'm going to give you an overview. Principally, this relates to nurse-led interventions, patient-controlled analgesia, or epidural infusions, and all require, obviously, the management of side effects. Nurse-led is probably the most common. Once a nurse assesses that the patient has pain, she will have to look at the drug chart and see what is prescribed. In the UK, you then have to go to the drug cupboard. Opiates are stored in two cupboards, and you must have two registered nurses present. The nurses then check the drugs, count how many there is, and record this into a book. They will then prepare the infusion or medication. They will then go back to the patient, and two nurses have to be present when giving the injection or preparing the infusion. As you can see, this is labor intensive, it takes a lot of time, and means that the patient has to wait a long time to get their pain, particularly if your unit is very busy. Perhaps the most popular and growing option is patient controlled analgesia. This is a mechanism where the patient has control over the medication. Patients give themselves a dose according to their pain. You can set parameters to avoid overdosing or to limit how much a patient can have in an hour. The research shows us a much more efficient way of relieving pain compared to other methods. The system also ensures that the patient gets a continuous background painkiller. And studies looking at patients' experiences say they prefer this system. However, it does require manual dexterity. So patients with arthritis or problems with handling things or spinal injuries, this would not be very useful. You have to have a good understanding and level of consciousness. Some commentators have suggested that it may reduce the nurse-patient interaction because the patient can control his own pain. And as with any system, there's always a risk of equipment malfunction, and often we only use them for 48 hours. Epidural infusions. They're also very popular in the UK. They're suitable for people who are operative risks or have respiratory problems. They're useful for patients who are going to experience severe pain following surgery. They do help enhance recovery, and we only use them for around 72 hours. But there are many risks and problems with epidurals. For example, cannula leak, hematoma, abscesses, displaced catheters, inadequate block, inadequate pain relief, and cardiorespiratory toxicity. So nursing interventions, again, they're all based on research principles and the best available evidence. We will monitor for signs of pains and effectiveness, again, using a PQRST tool, a VAS, or numerical rating scale. We will also consider blood pressure, heart rate, and respiratory patterns. We will adjust analgesia according to the pain control. We will manage side effects such as nausea, vomiting in the same way. We will be careful of documenting all our interventions and our actions relating to the use of opiates and pain relief strategies. And we will also seek this help from the acute acute pain care team. In the UK, about 5 years ago, acute care pain teams were introduced, and they comprised of a nurse, a physiotherapist, a pharmacist, and a doctor. Specialist pain nurses can visit a clinical area, review patients, and then revise medications. Interestingly, the research shows that where you have a pain care team, there's greater use of PCA, or patient controlled analgesia, more use of epidurals. Staff are more knowledgeable because there's regular in-service training days. There's written guidelines and protocols for postoperative pain management. There's regular audits of practice. And the impact of nurses on such teams has been to improve postoperative care for patients after surgery. Education and alternative methods of pain control. Well, as I said before, information giving is central to any strategy involving pain control. Explaining procedures is vital. But for such patients, we also have preoperative visits. We teach them how to use the equipment if they're going to use patient control analgesia. And it gives patients the opportunity to familiarize themselves with the nursing staff and the intensive care environment. Collectively, all these approaches help to reduce anxiety and minimize stress. As I said, therapeutic massage may be used in some areas. Music therapy, guided therapy, this involves thinking about a nice environment, like we could be all together on the beach, lots of sun, some martinis, that sort of thing. And hypnotherapy. Now, for some patients, the above strategies will not work. Hypnosis has been used in some cases. I know one patient who was had a low threshold for pain. So he was given some cassette tapes to listen to at home. He was a big gentleman, and he had just had heart surgery. And they said to me, you need to look after this man. He's got some morphine. He's got some sedation. But when he wakes up, be careful. So I said, why? John, all you have to do is say calm. So this man woke up, started pulling all the lines. And I didn't believe them. So I put my hand on his chest, said, calm, calm. And he went back to sleep. So sometimes hypnotherapy and hypnosis does work. Now, in the UK, we use the World Health Organization analgesic ladder. Typically, for a patient with chronic pain, you'll start with mild, non-opioids, moderate pain, weak opioids, with or without a non-opioid. And for severe chronic pain, you will start with strong opioids. For a patient following surgery, we will go this way, yes? Now, in the UK, we also have critical care pathways. A pathway is a way of tracking all the care you give to the patient, the investigations, treatments, and involves every member of the healthcare team. So, for example, a patient who's had an aortic aneurysm, the pathway might say for day one, start antibiotics. Physiotherapy must visit twice. Reduce sedation. commence weaning. If there are no adverse effects, extubate the patient and order chest x-ray. If bowel sounds are present, start sips of water. Sit up in bed and commence oxygen therapy. Monitor blood gases. Reduce the use of opiates and commence oral painkillers. The plan would be that by day 3 or 4, the patient is walking, he's mobilizing, he's independent, and he's managing with oral painkillers. Essentially, the pathway is a way of identifying every step in the patient's care and where standards have been very successful, but where standards have also failed. Now, the pathway does recognize that every patient's pain and every person is an individual. And the documentation allows to modify according to the patient's individual needs. Pathways are an attempt to standardize the care patients receive to ensure they have the right care at the right time by the right professional expert. A word about autonomy. In the United Kingdom, the scope of professional practice is a document that allows nurses to do almost everything, providing they can demonstrate it is of benefit to the patient, they have had training, and they are recognized as competent. In which case, your hospital will cover you from a liability point of view. If you violate the trust policy or document, then you're on your own. We have study days for intravenous use, epidural study days, management of patient control analgesia infusions. But these are not part of pre-registration. They're all part of extended roles that go beyond registration. Finally, my last message for you is that despite guidelines, evidence-based protocols, the role of the nurse is pivotal. In addition, I'd like you to remember that pain control is a partnership with your patients. Thank you.